You're listening to Pen to Band, a podcast with stories from the human world. Hello there, online space travelers. Welcome to the Pen to Band. Today I will speak about the nose-mind connection, or to be more exact, about a sense of smell. Smells and tastes are our most direct, intimate, and specific encounters with the molecules building the world around us. Smells may be everyday sensations, but the more we read about them, the more extraordinary they become. The smell is the sense of memory and desire. In the Andaman Islands, the Ongi people consider smell not as an isolated sense, but as a fundamental cosmic principle. For them, the odor is the source of personal identity. Urban living creates olfactory dysfunction. Two studies in Mexico show olfactory impairment due to urbanization. How well you can smell could be a sign of overall brain health. Researchers found that a simple smell test may predict your chance of having dementia. Ability to smell is a window into parts of the brain related to core functions like pleasure, emotion, and the memory. A nose that doesn't work so well gives the brain less information. Some research suggests that this lack of stimulation may weaken our systems. The nose's direct line from the environment to the brain could mean that pollutants, viruses, and bacteria travel through the nasal passages to set the wheels of brain disease in motion. Some viruses, which researchers consider a possible cause of Parkinson's disease, could reach the brain through the nose. Studies show that children and young adults who live in areas with heavy air pollution, such as Mexico City, have brain inflammation and buildup in their brains of some of the same proteins seen in older adults who have Alzheimer's or Parkinson's. Odors influence human behavior. The perception of the so-called pheromones is frequently mentioned in the context of a functional vomeronasal organ, also called the Jacobson organ. Vomeronasal ducts can be detected in approximately half of the human population. Its functionality still a matter of discussion. The vomeronasal organ was first described in humans in the 17th century. The forms of the vomeronasal organ can be characterized in three different types: fissure, facet, and circular. The facet type is commonest in male and the fissure among females. Malcolm Lyle Watson was born in Johannesburg, South Africa. He had an early fascination for nature in the surrounding bush, learning from Zulu and Kung Bushmen. He was a South African botanist, zoologist, biologist, anthropologist, ethnologist, and author of many books, one of which I would like to mention, Jacobson's Organ and the Remarkable Nature of Smell. The book was first published in 1999. I've heard of the Jacobson Organ about 30 years ago, long before internet was available. Many years later, I kept on researching on the topic and found his wonderful book. Here are a few thoughts from this book. Smell was our first sense. It is even possible that being able to smell was the stimulus that took a primitive fish and turned a small lump of olfactory tissue on its nerve cord into a brain. We think because we smelt. Smell is a long-distance sense, a way of stretching time and finding out in advance what lies ahead. In a habitat where sight is limited and sound cannot be localized, only smell can pick up traces that provide solid information from afar. For example, many sharks find their food by smell. He also wrote, "If I am right about Jacobson, Oregon, all that information is filed away somewhere, not in the gray matter of the conscious brain, which is far too busy with things of the moment, but in the warehouse of the long-term memory, in those parts of the brain more touched by sensibility than mere sensation. The smell is a chemical sense. The receptor cells in the nose translate chemical information into electrical signals. All our noses are alike from the inside. Most of this is air conditioning apparatus divided up into three chambers. The flow of air throughout the left and right nostrils is seldom equal. High on the roof of the two upper chambers, roughly on the level with our eyebrows, there is a patch of yellowish tissue in a pair of clefts. Each patch is 1 centimeter square. Both are richly equipped with several million fringed receptor cells. This is where smells are collected. Trained noses can identify hundreds of thousands of odors, far more than our mind can describe. The odor-to-nose sequence is not the only way we smell. Our nasal chambers are connected to the outside air directly through the nostrils and indirectly through the throat by inside air that comes with the flavor of food and drink and the products of digestion. This information goes to the olfactory bulbs of the brain. But riding on the side of each of these swellings in our heads are other smaller lobes called accessory bulbs, which get their news of the world from the altogether different source, the twin-tubed organ of Jacobson. The first reports about such an organ were from Victorian anatomists. In another Polish research done in 2007, I found the following information. The influence of the chemical substances pheromones on the human emotional and physical condition has fascinated psychologists and sexologists for centuries. Literature conveys conflicting information on vomeronasal organ, also called shortly VNO, occurrence in humans. The study was conducted in a group of 634 patients aged 18 to 80 years old. The organ was found in 312 persons. The organ was found more often in men than women. Another study in Izmir, Turkey, was performed by nasal examination of 346 adults and in 21 corpse heads. They used rhinoscopy and videotaped rigid 30 degrees endoscopy. The organ was identified in 112 patients, which is 32%, and in 8 of the 21 corpse heads. Some other researchers mention that some people just have a very small Jacobson organ, which makes it hard to be detected, while others have a bigger one. Now we are going back to the book from 1999. In 1991, Bruce Jafak was a nose jobs surgeon. He and the microscopist David Moran discovered the organ in 200 people they examined and stated, "Everyone has a pair unless they have had cosmetic surgery, which removes that part of the nasal septum entirely. The organ can often be seen with the naked eye as tiny pale pits near the front of the nasal septum, about 1.5 centimeters in from each nostril, just above the floor of the nose. These pits lead to the two short tubes equipped with sensory cells different from those in normal olfactory tissue. Moran said, "They don't look like any other nerve cells I have ever seen before in the human body." In 1990, the psychologist Luis Montibloch and Larry Stensas of the University of Utah examined 400 subjects and found that all of them had such twin tubes, and they were using these organs to send messages to the brain. The Jacobson organs are not receptive to ordinary odors. They respond most often to a range of substances that have large molecules but often no detectable odor. And they communicate not with the olfactory bulbs of the cortex, but with the accessory bulbs and that part of the brain that coordinates mating and other basic emotions. It is possibly connected with subliminal impressions for all the things that lead to what Karen Wright calls bad vibes, warm fuzzies, instant dislikes, and irresistible attractions. Some describe the Jacobson organ as our sixth sense. By the way, Aristotle associated the sense of smell with the fifth element, the so-called quintessence. From other sources, the general term of any airborne molecule is volatile, a word that derives from the Latin for to fly and was first applied centuries ago to birds and butterflies and other winged creatures. The overall smell of something is a mix created by the component smell or notes of its most prominent volatile molecules. When we smell something, it is because particles of that thing is vaporized, airborne, volatile molecules. They enter us and for some time become a part of us. That is actually a quite disgusting, disturbing thought. No wonder we instinctively hold our breath when we smell something disturbing. It is a very natural reaction. It means that smell connects us directly and intimately with the substance of the world we live in. Smell is on the lookout for whatever molecules happen to be in the air that might be significant for our well-being. Because even the simplest smells arise from a composite of volatiles, smells are often linked to a musical chord, a combination of several different notes that we hear as a single recognizable sound. Casually, we say that foods have flavors and flowers have smells. In fact, what they have are only volatile molecules. Sensations and perceptions, smells and tastes and flavors are products of our brain. The brain doesn't simply register the direct reports of the receptors, but actively creates smells and tastes and flavors by filling out those reports with many other kinds of available information, and especially information from its database of past experiences. The psychologist Donald McBurney and others have found that romantic partners, parents, children, and siblings commonly smell each other's clothes and bed sheets for olfactory comfort, an extension of the well-established phenomenon of contact comfort, which is the calming effect that bodily contact has on infants. Here it seems that our attention is drawn to the generic smell of human presence, as well as the particular volatiles that distinguish our loved ones, both their own and those they borrow from soaps and scents. One study states we can sense up to 1 trillion odors. More of our DNA is devoted to genes for different olfactory receptors than for any other type of protein. New research states we have olfactory receptors even in the muscles and in the kidneys, lungs, and blood vessels. Olfactory receptors have even been involved in wound healing and lung protection. So every time you smell, be aware of the wonder your body is. I hope you have enjoyed this episode of Pentaman Stories from the Human World. Hello, you're listening to Pentaman, a podcast with stories from the human world.